If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS connects you with podcasts, videos, and live experiences about the artists and topics you love. Visit OSIRISPod.com to check out our shows. In fact, you should check out No Simple Road or Inside Out with Turner and Seth. Both are great shows. OSIRIS works in partnership with Jambase, which connects music fans with the music they love and empowers them to go see live music. For more, check them out at jambase.com. The show starts now.
I got chest pains. My left arm is numb. I sprang to my feet. This could be the big one. I Google my symptoms as I morbidly walk to the kitchen. I'm coming to you, Jerry, so I fry up all the bacon and I drink up all the liquor. If I'm going down, I'm going down singing. If I'm going down, I'm going down swinging. If I'm going down, I'm going down with a smile upon my face, a birdie place. If I'm going down, I'm going down happy. I've been living every day like it was the last day since I was 19 in Alpine Valley. I raise my arms, I smile real wide. I look up in the mirror just to see if I'm a drooping on one side. Sway to the music, naked on the cell phone speaker. Filling the house with the sand of bacon at 4 in the morning. If I'm going down. Celebrate. I take that seriously. Cause it's not every day you think you're gonna die, and you don't. If I'm going down, I'm going down singing. If I'm going down, I'm going down swinging. Going down, I'm going down. chest pains. My left arm is numb. I sprang to my feet. This could be the big one.
You've been listening to The Big One from Keller Williams off his forthcoming record, Add, due out May 31st. Keller is just about as prolific a singer-songwriter that there is in our scene these days. As you'll soon hear, Keller is always thinking about expanding his craft and is constantly thinking about not only how he writes and performs his music, but also how it will be received. We shared a few laughs in this one, and I can tell you firsthand, Keller is a super good guy that is always super accommodating when we reach out. So given that he is such a prolific writer, I wondered how the songs came together for Ad, and that's where our conversation started.
The lyrics to this record kind of happened on their own in the sense of, songs writing themselves. Just a big flurry of inspiration came quickly, with songs like Dubstep and Beat My Chest, and songs like that came out pretty quickly. And I think it's a sign that I'm thinking more as far as the beats and the complexity goes, trying to be more complex, to push myself, in the sense of like Poser the Fake, that was very much an improv, and mm-hmm. then I would have to go follow that improv for the bass and for the drums. And I think it's more appealing to me the more complex things are getting, at least with my music. And then there's a kind of simplicity in the lyrics as well. So kind of put those two together, and I think it's a bit of a yin and a yang.
When you say the songs write themselves, it's more than that, probably. I mean, when you sit down, and I have no idea what you're sitting down to, but perhaps a Pro Tools session or Final Cut session or Logic session or something like that, there must be, at your disposal, you have millions of instruments. You have to think about, A, what kind of instruments you're going to add to what you're doing, but B, also how you're going to be able to perform some of these songs on stage. What's more restricting? Cutting stuff down so that you can perform this stuff on your own, or cutting it down so that, you aren't working with millions of or hundreds of tracks?
Well, I'd say it's more difficult explaining to folks that they might not be performed exactly the way they're on the record, mm-hmm. especially with my instrumental record called Sands, yeah. That's a lot of stuff that was self-indulgent mix. I'm definitely playing all these songs, but they're not necessarily like, Beat My Chest doesn't have a 300-pound, 60-year-old Samoan in the corner moaning, which kind of what that bass line sounds like a little bit, at least to my wife. And I felt like that was kind of spot on description of it. I had a hard time with that bass line, so I sang it, and then I just sent my voice an octave low. Right. And therefore, it's like a singing bass line. Things like that, that those are like happy accidents. I forgot where I was going with that.
Well, we were just talking about the limitation of you performing live versus having an infinite number of tracks where you can add and delete as you create these records.
Right. Now, it's also, like I keep saying, self-indulgent, but it's also a way for me to document these tunes in the best way I know how, to last for, longer than if I just played them solo acoustic, which is how some of them appear live. But, adding in different instruments, which you're right, at my fingertips in the MIDI world is any instrument. Now, granted, I'm playing these instruments on a keyboard, but it's coming out in different as different instruments. But it's just a way. All these records are a way for me to document where I am, you know, headspace and lyrically and rhythmically, and that's kind of why I put so many instruments and so much into it. Even when I can't reproduce it live, I mean, I can, but I don't.
How do you find the time to be on the road constantly, playing, you know, in different kinds of bands, whether they're a Keller Williams show or the Petty tribute, the Bluegrass Petty tribute, or, you know, some of the Grateful Dead stuff that you do, tribute stuff that you do? How do you find the time to sit down and even think about, you know, you say that these songs come easy to you, but I would suspect that they have to, because you just don't have the time to constantly be recording in a complex way.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's where a lot of the covers on records come from. Like, I just did a Keller and the Keels record, and there's two original songs on there and 10 covers. And like what you're talking about, the Quizzessential Keels record would be, you know, full on entertaining covers done a different way. That's just like a different project, you know?
Yeah.
But this one, my solo gig is pretty much, you know, I can't record songs if there's no songs to record. And that's what Ad really, really helped out in, that these songs came quickly. Granted, the big one was recorded probably three and a half years ago, but I never really found a home for it on a record. So that one was done, and there was kind of an idea to create some kind of record that song would fit into.
But that never...
And I was really happy. Well, it never did until Ad came around. And so now that Ad has a home, and I'm happy to say it's getting airplay, which the big one, the single, the big one is getting airplay.
And that's, of course, you know, you mentioned Alpine Valley and you mentioned Jerry very briefly. I mean, that is, and you say you wrote that song 3 years ago. Is how deep? I mean, I think we're all of us in this community are in some way inspired by Jerry or the Grateful Dead. How deep is that inspiration for you?
Well, it's pretty damn deep. I'd say, you know, from the years 87 to, say, like 93, it was pretty much the soundtrack. Like, that's all I was listening to, that's all I was learning, that's all I was playing. You know, my idea was to kind of gather like minds together and celebrate songs, you know. And that's kind of what my gigs were in the early 90s, was playing that type of music. But it's more than just the music for me. I was able to really learn how to be thrifty on the road, you know, traveling around to see them. You know, first of all, I would work at some silly job, and then I'd make enough money to go see 10 shows. And then I would do that, and then I'd come back and start over. And without a whole lot of money, you know, young people, teenagers in the parking lot, you know, you got to figure out how to do that without begging, you know.
Right.
And so doing that and learning how to be thrifty on the road definitely was brought over into my solo work, because there was a long time, many, many years, where I was a legitimate solo act, meaning it was me and a guitar and a djembe and a dog in a pickup truck, you know, sleeping in the bucket seat and stuff. And I, you know, just traveling with that kind of gypsy circus helped me really understand a community of a scene, as well as, you know, learning how to get from point A to point B without begging.
It's interesting, because I would imagine that that's kind of what shaped the way in which you record music. You know, you talk about being thrifty and being a one-man act, and certainly when people think of Keller Williams, they think of all the pedals and all the all of the electronic gear that's required. I mean, so being on the road and following the Dead for all those years made you resort to being the musician that you are, right? I mean, you couldn't afford to carry around a drummer or another guitar player or a bass player. I mean, it really had shaped you as a musician or your sound.
That's very true. And there's nothing more expensive than humans. and the looping thing, which came in the mid the late 90s, was definitely a direction I needed to go to open up more avenues for me to go down musically, without pushing this button of a sequencer and have it all be there, have, you know, organically created, but yet entertain myself more. You know, it was becoming important to entertain myself more. And damn if that didn't work.
Is that the challenge? Is the entertaining yourself really the challenge, and why things get so complex and, as you have said on numerous occasions, self-indulgent? Because it really is about, as much as the music is probably for the fans, the muse of figuring all of this stuff out is for you.
I would say that's very accurate, yeah, and that's why I'm so, I have a unhealthy obsession with my set list, and that I know no one really is paying attention to what I played, and so it doesn't matter if I play the same thing, you know, a year later when I come in, but I'm always keeping track and studying those set lists and trying not to play those things that I played last year either, and it's just like, no one's at every show but me, so I'm trying to make sure that I don't go in there and open and close with the same stuff that I did the year before, which is really important to me for some strange reason.
There are two cover songs on this record, and I want to ask you about both. Fire Hose is the first one. You cover Brave Captain. What made you decide to do these two covers on this particular record?
Well, Brave Captain is definitely a song from my youth. I was into punk rock. I was definitely into skateboarding. I shared the love of this song with my buddy Gib Droll, who when he was a teenager, he was really into skateboarding. I think he was a pro. He went pro for a little while. And there was a couple videos that he saw, one of which this guy was getting this giant air, and it was to the song Brave Captain, you know, and when it goes from fast to kind of a slow section in the chorus, this guy was getting this like slow-mo air way up, and he would Gib say, you know, that's the first time he saw it. And he and I played that in Williams, Mosley, Joel, and Sype. And I think we might have played it in Quattro, too. So it's definitely been around for a long time in my head. And the lyrics seem to be really on par with kind of the division of, you know, the political side of the country right now.
Right.
With, you know, just kind of, you know, talking to this, you know, in these war scenarios, just the lack of trust, you know, that's going on in so many different sides. And without being overly political, you know, it felt like it was very relevant. Mm-hmm. And the Joni Mitchell thing, you know, I've just always been a huge fan with her, and always love to play songs that Joni Mitchell fans know, but not necessarily, you know, big hits.
Right.
And I've always dug the songs as the different, you know, the way the timing is and the lyrics. I just love Joni Mitchell and I felt like this was a really interesting version of it that people might dig.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, these are, you know, even though we know the originals, they are your own take on those originals, which is refreshing and a great way to hear these songs again. I'm curious
Nice.
About the inspiration for Impeding the Hunt, because of all the songs on the record, it's the one, well, I shouldn't say that. The Big One also is very relatable in many ways. But
yeah,
I was in my, I guess, junior and senior year in high school and throughout university, I was a mobile DJ who played, you know, all of these weddings and corporate events and had to learn all of the dances that you reference in Impeding the Hunt. And I'm wondering if it's Impeding the Hunt as much as it's Thinning the Herd.
That's funny. That you can't really make something like that up. I mean, I guess you can if you really have an imagination. No, but that's one of those that wrote themselves. We built this house on this section of the river. I'm sure there's generations of people hunting in front of the house on a boat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Five in the morning, you know, right before the sun comes up, you know, they're shooting and kids are waking up and everyone's getting pissed off. And so, you know, I crank up the music and they start to dance. And and then I blasted the Elmo, and that's real. That all happened.
Wow.
And that pissed them off and they left. And I think they've come back, but never when I've been home. Usually been, I don't know if they're figured out my schedule or anything, but, you know, I'm always gone usually Thursday right. morning through Sunday afternoon. And so I know that they've come back during that time, but my wife likes to keep everyone happy and not everyone mad at us, so she doesn't do anything.
Thanks for this record. You are it's a fairly safe assumption to say, Keller, you'll be on the road performing these songs and many others. You have a busy schedule as per usual, right?
I do. Yeah, it's about 110 shows a year, all on the weekends. There's a lot of the holiday weekends,
right?
And plus the older I get, I definitely get a lot more Sunday slots, and I'm not complaining. But usually it's Thursday to Sunday, but sometimes I come home on Monday. But yeah, there's no backup plan. I will be playing these and many other songs around the continental U.S. and Hawaii and Alaska.
It looks like May, June, July, August, September, and I'm sure we'll have a new record. Well, I shouldn't say sure, but, you know, fairly certain. A new record in October or November as you take those into a winter tour. Is that a thing that's always on your mind? Are you always thinking about how to improve, how to write more material, how to play around with new beats and gizmos and all of that?
I definitely start with the actual arrangement and lyrics of a song. You know, actual song structure. That's kind of where I start with, and then once that's there, then the beats and the sounds and noises, so to speak, kind of come later.
But you're always writing. Are you always have a pad ready to go?
I'm always playing. I'm not always writing. I'm always like doodling and playing. And there's songs musically that come out of that, and once I have kind of have a musical idea or a riff that I'm going to want to play again, that's kind of when I put a melody to it. And once the melody's there, then I'll start putting lyrics. Other times the lyrics come first and it's just a bam, there's some kind of catchy phrase that I'll put, I'll write to. Like most recently, I don't want to get into that, but I'm definitely working on a song now that's inspired by a picture, you know, and just looked at the picture and kind of came up with a scenario and just went with it, kind of a writing assignment. But things like that. But usually it starts with, you know, doodling on the guitar and music and coming up with some kind of progression or something of that nature.
What are you listening to now when you're driving around? Is there an artist or a few artists that you are particularly digging these days that you want to turn people on to? Because I would imagine that too is a fairly eclectic kind of thing for you.
Well, again, the kind of music I release and the kind of music I listen to are often different. But to answer your question, the stuff that I'm really into these days are, there's a DJ out of UK called Troy Boy, T-R-O-Y-B-O-I, kind of a minimalist trap, kind of heavy in the hip-hop without all the, you know, the N-words and right. The bitches.
but definitely
got real, real heavy kind of hip-hop. But minimal trap sort of way. I really, really love that. I love Bass Nectar. I love Pretty Lights. A band that I've discovered recently. I think there's a record that came out in 2014. It's by a band called the Cootie Mangoes. K-U-T-I Mangoes. I love. Fela Kuti and right. And the whole revolution of Afrobeat that came from him and that's, you know, that surrounding area, and these guys seem to grasp that but also put in a lot more, you know, funk and kind of jazz licks in the horns. And Kuti Mangoes, that's really good stuff. I've been listening to a lot of Mike Doty lately, a singer-songwriter who was frontman for Soul Coughing,
mm-hmm.
and really, really into his writing. And
that's interesting because you have a similar cadence when you're not singing lyrics but speaking lyrics. It's an interesting idea that you'd be listening to Mike. That's very cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, And I think Todd Snyder has that as well too, more of a storytelling folk guy. Whereas Mike Doty is more of kind of like a beat jazz type of thing that I'm really, really interested in his lyrics and especially his singing style. It's so unique and not like classical, you know. It's
right.
Very beat oriented. I dig it. I really like him.
Yeah, very cool. Thanks for taking the time, man. Thanks for Ad, and thanks for doing what you do, man. You are an absolute inspiration to all of us who listen to you and have been doing so for so long. So thanks for taking the time.
Oh man, that's really nice to say. Thank you for the time on your podcast, and best of luck with it. And thanks for everything.
Keller is the best. He is awesomely talented, humble, and in it for all the right reasons. We enjoy talking to him because he gets it and is inspired by the same sorts of things that inspire us. For more on Keller, including tour dates and other neat stuff, visit kellerwilliams.net. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Ad. Here is Impeding the Hunt.
I built a little shack on the bank by the river, right outside of town. That's my sacred space. I'm gonna stay until the bank says I can't stick around. I got many camouflages on the boat on the river. right out in front of my house. They were blasting 12 gauges at 5 a.m. on the foul. That didn't fly south. Now it ain't no fun waking up to a gun, especially if you got you a daughter or a son. And when they're awake, everybody's awake. And let me tell you, it makes me wanna run right down the riverbank and dive into the river and breaststroke on out. Give them boys a piece of my mind, but they got guns from the stern to the bow. I was really glad at my decision not to do that. It was a bad idea. So I got me some outside speakers and turn up pretty loud. I reckon if I was gonna be awake, I'm gonna flood the wilderness with sound. Maybe they would give the camouflage a hint that we did not want them around. But it had the opposite effect, and those camo boys start to get down. They were doing a honky-tonk, a dunk-a-dunk, and a cotton-eye joke. Tango with the sheriff and the boot scoop, boogie the touche, push and the stroke. I think I saw Macarena electric slide as they did float. They was getting on down and making waves in the perfect way to fiberglass bass boat. They was getting on down and making waves in the perfectly way to fiberglass bass boat. Reckon those camouflage pappies took them to that spot when they were sprout. Shooting guns, killing things never was what my daddy was about. Obviously, we were raised differently, and I can understand that fact. But I can't understand blasting 12 gauges at 5 a.m. out in front of my shack. Well, that's just rude, man. It's loud. I mean, loud. Out. I imagine they were float hunting generations in that spot before the land we had won. I imagine life-changing talks in the boat between the pappy and his camouflage son. Like maybe it was there that the pappy told the boy about the birds and the bees. And maybe it was there that the boy told the pappy he's in love with his best friend Steve. I don't know, I just had my binoculars and I cranked it up. But they doing the honky-tonk, a dunk-a-dunk and the cotton-eyed Joe. Tangle with the sheriff and the blue scoop, boogie touche, push and straw. I think I saw a Macarena electric slide that they did flow. They's getting on better, making waves in the perfect way, fiberglass bass boat. They were getting on down to making waves in the perfectly weighted fiberglass bass boat. I match them boys, but the good and the good old boys, and if we met, we'd get along. They kinda won me over when they were twerking along to my song. Possibly our destiny, it lies within their fate. Cause this city slicker here eats me, don't wanna see how it gets to my plate. That's real. I reckon they're good guys to know. Right then both kids crawled in, turned the favorite TV show on. So I cranked up the outside speakers, but the camouflage boys did not sing along. It went la 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 la. Elmo's world at 110 dB across the wilderness. La 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 la. Elmo's world. Elmo likes his goldfish, his crayon too. Camouflage boys looked up at the shack like they were gonna cry. Pulled up their anchors and started up the engines, and they left without saying goodbye. There was no more honky-tonk, but dunk-a-dunk, no more cotton-eyed Joe. No more tango with the sheriff, no more boot scoop boogie, no more touche-poosh, no more straw. Wake me up with your shotgun, I will surely grunt. Something like that make a good man like me impede the hunt. One day I'm either gonna get locked up or shot for impeding the hunt.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.